Look up idiot in the dictionary, you know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to I Do Movies Badly, a podcast exploration of my cinematic ignorance. I am your host, Jim Rohner, and despite being an amateur film critic since 2006, I am woefully ignorant of many films, filmmakers, and genres that consensus has deemed important, and thus I have created this podcast to document my journey into cinematic edification. This month, I'm exploring the films of Andrei Tarkovsky, as recommended by Douglas McCambridge, and this week's episode, I'll be talking about Tarkovsky's directorial debut, 1962's Ivan's Childhood. Now, I have to address the elephant in the room before I get into the podcast, and the elephant is actually taking the form of a pre-war radiator that I have not so endearingly or affectionately dubbed Bubble Guts because of the noise it is currently making. Today in New York, it hit in the teens, in the lows, so like a bro, my radiator is trying to overcompensate by pumping my apartment filled with sauna-like temperatures, because I have tried to close the knobs to prevent brown, rusty water from spraying and or leaking all over my apartment floor. There is some sort of internal pressure kind of building up and bubbling in my radiator, so this, unfortunately, is the audio quality that we all have to deal with as this episode goes on. I sincerely apologize for it. I take pride in trying to deliver a podcast which is not just of intellectual quality, although I suppose some people can debate whether I actually deliver that, but also of good high audio quality as well, and this is really interfering with it today, so I apologize. I am not happy with it either. I am not satisfied with it either, but due to scheduling and just other things going on, I kind of have to record today. Plus, if I were to actually delay this until tomorrow, there's no guarantee that that would assuage the situation, so we kind of have to press on and move forward with this discussion of Ivan's Childhood as Bubble Guts just kind of bubble guts in the background. So, Ivan's Childhood, okay. I understand this is Tarkovsky's first film, and I certainly understand the things that I've read in which this is not the quintessential Tarkovsky film, but in this we kind of at least start seeing what themes, what shooting style, what aesthetic, what tone and mood Tarkovsky is going to be known for. This is sort of the seed that will ultimately be watered and blossom into what we come to know as a Tarkovsky film. having said that, or recognizing that, I watch this movie and I think, like, yeah, he's not quite there yet. And before you get upset or kind of mentally check out, I fully realize how pretentious that sounds. That me, this, ignorant podcaster in Brooklyn is saying, is watching the debut feature of a highly influential, prestigious, well-loved and respected late Russian filmmaker who has done more with this one movie than I've done in my entire life for anything, and I'm saying, like, eh, he's not quite near yet. But what I mean, and what I hope that you understand I'm saying, is that I can see, just based on, like, because this film has been described by more than a few people as austere, as minimalist, as poetic. I see those things, but I don't see that film as, this might be a weird way to put it, but I don't see it as entirely those things. I see those elements mostly, but I also see it getting dragged down by the plot and or lack thereof. And my complaint is not that there isn't much plot. I'm fully on board with a film that wants to be a tone poem, that wants to just sort of be a cinematic experience, that wants to try and express thoughts and moods and memories as a certain way, that wants to just use image to kind of convey those things. I'm fully on board with that idea, but Ivan's Childhood doesn't. And once again, I kind of realize how pretentious and how kind of snooty this is saying it, but, like, Ivan's childhood doesn't seem to fully commit to that. But at the same time, I know that's because this is the first film that Tarkovsky did, and therefore he would eventually get to that point. And he has said that Ivan's childhood was sort of a test for him to see if he could be a director, if he had it in him to be a director. And there are shots, there are sequences, there are moments in Ivan's childhood which are absolutely stunning and absolutely beautiful, even in you know, kind of a very parse black and white cinematography. There's some real beauty, and I think a lot of it is real beauty contrasted with some real darkness. So I'm not trying to say that Ivan's childhood is a bad film, but I am trying to say is that Ivan's childhood was it was easy for me to get distracted by the film itself or by things outside of the film, because not that it was schizophrenic, but because the moments that I was really engaged with were not sustained throughout the entire film, or because there were certain scenes where, I mean, the film is called Ivan's Childhood, so we are clearly dealing with, you know, what I see as not a coded meaning, but, you know, kind of a double meaning where it's like, this is Ivan's childhood as, you know, here's what it is because of what the war has made it. But then also with the memories, with the flashbacks, with the dream sequences, here's what Ivan's childhood was or could have been, or here's the childhood that was lost, and here's the childhood that we have. So, of course, Ivan being the crux, the center of the story, I found all the scenes with him in it, you know, completely, you know, kind of fascinating. But there are many moments in which this film kind of steps away to deal with other characters, to deal with Colleen or Galtsev, I believe his name is, but other characters when Ivan is off the screen, and I'm not really interested in those, or because I'm not sure what they're trying to do exactly. It's sort of bothersome to me or distracting to me when the movie does get away from Ivan and what Ivan is doing, because those first 10 to 15 minutes are amazing in the sense of how they are, like I said, they are beautiful, but they are emphatically beautiful because how they are juxtaposed with darkness, and that kind of sets the tone for the movie that we're going to see. It kind of says like, hey, this is the mood I'm going for, this is the tone that I'm going for, this is the ideas and the themes that I'm trying to be grasping with throughout this movie. And if you're on board with this first 10 or 15 minutes, you're going to be on board for the rest of the movie. And I'm like, yes, for the first 10 or 15 minutes, yes, Andrei Tarkovsky, I am on board, I want what you can give me. And then we have later on an extended sequence in which Colleen is trying to, not even trying to, but quite successfully sexually harassing a female medic by the name of Masha. We also have, you know, Galtsev, who seems to be struggling with his feelings for that, you know, for said female medic, who Colleen is quite successfully sexually harassing against her will, it certainly seems. And then we have, well, actually, now that I think about it, those are pretty much the only moments that I think of. So let me double back a little bit. I think that the most effective moments of Ivan's childhood to me were the ones that I was kind of preparing myself for, the esoteric ones, the surreal ones, the dream sequences that we had in these, starting off with that, you know, kind of that scene from the very beginning where Ivan is sort of running and all of a sudden it seems like he's being lifted up into the sky, and it's a very surreal moment, and then he's sitting down and he's drinking water and he's telling his mom about a cuckoo that he heard, and then his mom, bang, is dead right in front of him, and he wakes up. And where we are instead is we're not in a beautiful lit wooden naturescape with a loving woman and you know, and without cares in the world. Where we are, we're in an underground bunker, and Ivan is dirty and grimy and rough, and you see that he hasn't slept in days, and he's soaking wet, and everything on him is dirty, and it is a wonderful juxtaposition in the sense of like Tarkovsky kind of telling us like here's what the ideal is, here's the dream, here's beauty, and I'm taking that away from you because that's what the war did. The war took that away from, maybe it's not saying him, because I know this is not a necessarily a personal story, but it is a, you know, I'm sure that being a spiritual filmmaker, this was personal to him on some extent, but he's kind of saying like, this is what the war did to people. This is what the war did to kids. This was a terrible thing, a terrible global thing that turned kids into soldiers, instead of having kids running down a beach, they are running behind enemy lines, you know, trying to be scouts and trying to be soldiers, and it's a horrific thing. And in those first 10-15 minutes, I was absolutely sold with what this idea was, or with this juxtaposition and with this contradiction between surreal dreams and just the bitterness of real life. And I had to fight off the inclination or the reaction, like, well, I've seen films which are like war is hell. I've seen those films and I've seen them done better. I've seen them done more effectively, or I've seen them done more viscerally. And if you had that reaction too, the one thing that I had to keep telling myself was, and that I would tell you is to remember or keep in mind the context behind the making of Ivan's Child, which in the sense of like, yes, it was the 1960s in Soviet Russia, so, you know, hey, the World War II should be quite a distant memory, right? It's like, well, yeah, but at the same time, we were also dealing with a communist country where there's such a tight control over the nation's image and even the nation's memories and even how people and forces and the government and the army is going to be remembered. And so Ivan's Childhood wasn't necessarily the first film that did it, but it was part of a movement of films along with Cranes Are Flying and a few other films which are the titles of which are escaping me at this point, from like the late 50s and the early 60s, which sort of started moving away from this idea of let's remember or let's depict the war, you know, or the battles and the glory of winning, or maybe even the brutality of winning, instead kind of focusing on the idea of the irrevocable misery from loss that individuals experience. And you kind of have the most or I guess sort of the bleakest fruition of that, in which it is a young child who saw not only his family lost before his eyes, but his innocence and his chance to grow up and his chance to be a quote-unquote regular child and develop into a regular adult. You had that snatched away from him. So it might not be the most emotional story. I mean, Tarkovsky certainly doesn't seem concerned with, I wonder about that too, because the film is light on dialogue, so there's not a whole lot of scenes or a whole lot of a dialogue and talking which is meant to a extract an emotional reaction from you. But instead, he chooses to use the camera and to use the camera placement, staging, cinematography, and editing, and how scenes are put together next to each other to kind of evoke instead emotion from you. Which is a very difficult thing to do. It's a very ambitious thing to do, but it's a very difficult thing to do. And the fact that he tried to take this on as a first-time filmmaker, I mean, he gets absolutely an A for effort. And like I said, those moments which were esoteric, those moments where he was trying to use the camera to evoke something or to capture something or to render something that is so indescribable for the most part, so intangible and surreal, such as dreams, such as memory. The fact that he tries to use that stuff or tries to use the camera to evoke that stuff is admirable, and I was on board with that stuff. I was on board with, like I said, the juxtaposition between that opening scene and the reality of where we were. I was on board with the dream sequence where he falls asleep in bed and we're looking up almost as though we're at the bottom of a well, and we see him and his mom in this peaceful moment sort of talking about trying to catch a star. I was on board with the dream sequence where he's on the back of a truck with a young girl, and the back of this truck is filled with apples, and they're getting soaked in the rain, but they're laughing and they're happy, and he's holding out apples to her, and her facial expression keeps changing, which from what I've read means it's supposed to be some type of childlike, for lack of a better term, anticipation of tragedy coming. But then as that truck drives along the beach and spills out all those apples, and there's all these horses that are come over, and it's just, I was on board with those things and sort of this, even this, this rough, not even rough, but even this idea of this surreal idea. I was on board with that sort of stuff and this idea. Like I fully admit that there were so many camera placements and ways that he uses the camera and ways that he shoots things that I didn't really fully understand. I did notice that a lot of scenes, a lot of conversations are framed in such a way which you don't normally see. There's not the standard, master shot and then, you know, cut into shot, reverse shot kind of things. That's not how he stages his conversations. He doesn't necessarily stage his character center of the screen, but he might stage Ivan off to the right of the screen and keeping his head down. And in the background, you can kind of see Galtsev, who is pouring hot water into a tub so that Ivan can wash himself off. And there's something which is, it is an unbalanced shot. And I don't know why he chose to do that. In the sense of, I don't know, at that specific moment, I don't know why he framed the scene like that. I don't know why he wanted to shoot the one of the dream sequences, though, the camera is at the bottom of a well and we're looking up at Ivan and his mother. I don't know why. There's very clearly a scene when Ivan is sitting in the, I don't know, a superior officer's office, and we can see out in the background of the window that there are soldiers and stuff bantering about, but the sense of that there's many scenes that he staged where your focus is distracted. I don't know why he did that. I don't know why a lot of shots are off-centered. I don't know why the camera has this beautiful fluidity in the wood scene where Colleen is trying to seduce. I don't know what he's doing with this woman, where, and the camera moves from kind of being over them to down under them. He does specific camera movements and placements which aren't flashy. They don't have a lot of flair, but they at least, there is something within you which you kind of, you're watching and you're thinking like, huh, this is not that it's not normal, but this is not what I'm used to seeing. There's something different here. There's something different about the framing. There's something different about the way that the scenes are staged. And I don't necessarily know why he did them, but I at least know on the surface level that he did that for a specific reason, that he is trying to invoke within me the feeling of, this is different from what I'm used to. I would love to be that guy who has some type of high-minded or hoity-toity explanation as to, like, well, you know, this scene is really supposed to be invoking this feeling of philosophical blah, blah, blah. I would love to be that person, but I can't be that person because all I can do is watch the scene and be like, this is beautiful. It invokes a feeling of being different within inside me, but I can't exactly put my fingers on it. And I think I'm not going to say that entirely has to do with Tarkovsky being this is his being a first-time film, but I will say that it has a lot to do with that. And the other side is, yes, admittedly, I'm not super familiar with Tarkovsky. I'm not super familiar with Russian cinema. I'm not super familiar with, you know, with the films that he saw that were inspirations on him. So there's a relationship here in which Tarkovsky as a filmmaker, as a first-time filmmaker, is trying to do a lot of things. It's not that he's not successful, but it's also that there is something muddling the clarity of why he's trying to do those things. And I don't say that necessarily as a bad thing. I don't say that in the sense of I'm trying to criticize Ivan's childhood, but it's just like there... Lines were crossed. But there's a miscommunication between what Tarkovsky is trying to do and what I understand of what he's trying to do. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think I've talked a bunch of times on this podcast about context and meeting a film on its terms, and maybe I was just a little bit too prepared for what Tarkovsky would ultimately become. Maybe I was kind of expecting Tarkovsky's persona, or maybe I was expecting what I understand Solaris and the Mirror to be. Maybe I hadn't grounded, you know, put my feet on the ground, and maybe I was just preparing for a film that was nothing but flashbacks and dream sequences, and maybe that distracted me. But all I know is that as I was reading a lot on this film today, whether it be the essay that comes with a Criterion Collection version of this film, and I'll post that on the Facebook page so you can take a reading of it too, or other people's explanations or readings or analysis of this. There were certain things that I read which I don't have a specific example right now, unfortunately. It's been a long day. But someone would write a paragraph about how this sequence is supposed to be invoking this. And I would read that and say, oh, that makes a lot of sense. I see that now. But I didn't see that when I first watched it. And once again, I have to believe that some of that has to do with the fact that Tarkovsky, this was his first film, and so he was trying to do a few things, and maybe it wasn't super clear. And that's not any fault of his own, because I'm sure that, you know, it's going to be a lot clearer in Solaris, it's going to be a lot clearer in The Mirror, it's going to be what he's trying to do, or at least maybe not what he's trying to do, but what I read it to be. Perhaps that will be clear as it goes along, because he gets more refined as a filmmaker, because I get more used to him as a filmmaker. But there's just stuff that I was reading where it's like, I see what people are saying, and I see it now, but I didn't see it when I was first watching it. But I at least did recognize that there was something different, that he has crafted this film and this sequence in such a way where I recognize there was something different about it, and my attention should be drawn to it. I'm just not sure why he is doing it. I eventually found myself sort of having an almost a Pavlovian response to these dream sequences that I mentioned, because it was sort of, as Doug mentioned, and as I saw in this movie, there is a great deal of difference, of aesthetic difference between the dream sequences, the flashbacks, and reality. And a lot of that does have to do with, like, yes, it is... It seems like it is a lot darker in the real world, in the contemporary, quote-unquote contemporary world, for this film at least. Whenever we are indoors, you can always bet that it's going to be the contemporary time. That is not to say that all contemporary sequences are indoors, but the indoor ones are contemporary. And when it's indoors, it's dark, and the lighting is a lot more stark, there's a lot more shadows at play. And you kind of get this sense of a darkness hanging over everybody. And of course everything is destroyed, and there's dirt and there's mud and there's ash and there's soot and there's blood and there's violence and there's death. The death even extends to plants, to trees. Whenever I saw leaves or foliage, it's like, oh, this is a dream. This is a flashback, because there is no foliage. There is no living thing, outside of the people. In the modern day sequences, I've noticed that it wasn't just plants, it wasn't just trees, and it wasn't just living things, but water was a big motif in the dreams and the flashbacks as well. Once again, not sure what Tarkovsky might have been trying to do with that, but I know what it invokes to me is a sense of comfort, a sense of gentleness. It appeared that in the dream in which Ivan has, in which him and his mother are looking down in the well, the camera is underneath it, because that seems to imply the viewer is drowning or the viewer is underwater. But instead, there's something peaceful about it, especially as you see the ripples across the water and as you see Ivan reaching for it. And there's just a sense of still water, of nothing moving. And what is invoked in me is the sense of peace and the sense of calm. Rain is entirely inconvenient for us when we're on the go, when we're trying to get to work, when we're, you know, we have plans or outside, and when we're, you know, trying to have a picnic or trying to play sports or whatever. But there is something which is just sort of exhilarating and exciting about willingly getting caught in the rain, of sort of giving yourself up to nature, of sort of just kind of, giving in to this force that you have no control over. And there's a joy and exuberance that I see in Ivan's face, in his friend's face, when he's having that dream about them in the back of the apple truck. There's a youthful exuberance to that I get caught up in, and that's very exciting. And yet you have water and you have trees/plants, and there is one sequence in which both of those things are brought together in contemporary time. But we see how the modern or the contemporary or the wartime taints what we see from the beauty of living things and the beauty and stillness of water. And that is when Ivan, Colleen, and Galtsev are on a dinghy, kind of trying to sneak across. Truthfully, I didn't really understand the scene. I wasn't sure what was happening there, why they were risking getting caught by the Germans, getting killed by the Germans. I think it has to do with they were trying to salvage the dead bodies of their two co-workers, compatriots who were dead and strung up and had the welcome sign pasted across. I think that's what they were trying to do. But in the middle of the night, what they are trying to do is they are in this dinghy and they are, quietly trying to sneak across. And so they are rowing through water, and they are rowing through kind of like this, what is essentially kind of like a swamp of dead trees kind of sticking out of the water. So we have this combination of plant life and of water that we have seen in the context of dreams and flashbacks as being something which hints at peace, which hints at an idealism, which hints at a thing, a way that things used to be. But in this, we see it tainted by the modernity, in the sense of the trees all look dead. It's dark outside, and the water is sort of swampy and gross, and you kind of like you wouldn't get the sense that you'd want to drink out of it like you would well water, or that bucket that we see Ivan drinking out at the very beginning of the film. We have these things which are supposed to be themes of innocence and of pleasantries, and we see it tainted by the modern day context in which it exists in that movie. And I thought that was a really effective and really powerful scene. And it's also probably symbolic in that scene, when all those elements are finally brought together, when water, when plants are brought together in this modern-day destroyed world of World War II, Russia. That is also the last scene that we see Ivan alive. And there's kind of a sense of foreboding about that. You kind of, in retrospect, I'm thinking about it, kind of thinking like, oh, that scene probably was signaling to me that Ivan is going to die, that Ivan will not survive once he walks away, because we have these symbols which sort of represent him or something, which are always seen with him in dreams, water and trees, and they are here and they are dead and they have been tainted. So Ivan is probably going to be tainted as well. And how is Ivan tainted? Ivan is tainted by dying. And that, I mean, that was, I think I complained about the scene in which we step away from Ivan, and that not, and it being a real distraction, because it comes like kind of right in the middle of the film, and I don't know what the hell purpose it's supposed to serve. I mean, maybe bring some type of humanity to Colleen or Galtsev. I'm not really sure. I just found it to be very distracting, because this woman essentially has no agency and no character, and she just kind of brought in, and Colleen grabs her and kisses her seemingly against her will, and all of a sudden we step away. I'm just like, what the hell was that? But the most effective scene of having Ivan away is that scene when they've invaded Berlin, they find that Ivan has been hanged. And that has to do with the fact that because we have seen Ivan, because we've seen him with these characters, we believe in the emotional response of them. And it's, I think it would have been more effective if we had stayed with him the whole time, and then his absence would have meant something, would have had a little bit more gravity. It's a weird nitpicky complaint to have, I know, especially because I say it is a good emotional moment, but I think it could have been a stronger emotional punch, like a period at the end of a sentence, if we hadn't had this diversion right in the middle, excuse me, where we step away and deal with sexual harassment for 10 minutes. It just seemed, it seemed incredibly weird to me. I know that too, Tarkovsky is a was a spiritual man, and so I try to keep that in mind as I was watching this movie, and kind of like, okay, and it might have been narrow and close-minded, but like, okay, what does this movie say about Christianity? And I don't think that was necessarily something that Tarkovsky was trying to hit on. Especially because the only thing that I really noticed, which was overt kind of Christian or faithful imagery, was the scene where there is a cross that is sort of slightly askew, sticking out of the ground, and there's, I don't even remember the context. That was the only thing that stood out to me as sort of overtly faith based. But if I think about it in retrospect, you know, after the movie has been done, I think that there is at least a recognition from Tarkovsky of the fallible nature of man, or at least how, recognition of the evils that man can do to another man. And I mean man in the capital sense, not in what a male can do to another male. But I think he is, and he definitely seems to be acknowledging and recognizing of truth and beauty, which sort of exists, not necessarily outside of us. We can exist with it, but it does sort of exist outside of us, and sort of how that can be tainted, how that can be brought down, how that can be corrupted, just like if we think about, you know, the myth of the origin of mankind, of Adam and Eve, and sort of the how man was forever corrupted, and how that corruption is kind of ever with us, and sort of we see that there's something that I think he sees about a recognition of innocence and a recognition of beauty, and also how that can be destroyed and stripped away and corrupted by mankind, however you wanted it. But that's sort of the only thing that really kind of struck me about some type of spirituality or some type of sense of beauty which sort of exists not just in nature or exists aesthetically, but something that sort of exists as a spiritual truth. When I first got done with the movie, I kind of saw the ending as something that was happy. You know, Ivan was running down the beach with his friend, and that was sort of, at first, to sort of interpret that as like, well, he's home now. If he's dead, then he's at peace. You know, not to say that was sort of a symbol of he is in heaven now. He's at peace. He no longer has to be consumed with the tortures of war. You know, he is in a spot where he can now be the child he was always meant to be, instead of having to be a soldier, instead of having to be a hard ass, instead of having to always be concerned with his own survival. Now he can just be a child. Now he can be carefree. Except the very last shot is the camera zooming in on that dead, decrepit black tree in the middle of the beach. And, you know, thinking more and more about it today, I don't think it is necessarily a happy ending. I think it sort of hints at that, not an eternal torment or an eternal tame, but sort of how that corruption, that evilness of man, you know, the evilness that starts World War II, the evilness that killed Ivan's mother, the evilness that drove Ivan down this path to having to be a soldier, to having to give up his childhood and his innocence, that evil was sort of all-consuming, and it was all-consuming to the point that it not only took away his innocence, but ended up taking away his life. So I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, something symbolic of Ivan being condemned to hell. I think it is more something that has to do with a symbol of this evil overtook Ivan's life. This evil overtook the lives of literally millions of Russian soldiers and citizens and millions of people during World War II. That evil was all-consuming, was for people like Ivan and for people who lost their lives in World War II, that was, you know, not the only thing they knew, but that was what they came to see and believe about the world, was that consumption, was that corruption, was that death and destruction. Doug said that that Tarkovsky's films were not exactly pick-me-ups, and so... So having that read, I don't think that that is necessarily contradictory with being spiritual, with being religious, you know, of recognition and a taking on of the, like, yeah, evil is present and it is terrible and it corrupts and it kills. I don't think that that is contradictory to being spiritual and being a believer, but it certainly is not the whole story. I wish I had more to say about Ivan Chayo, but I'm really not sure what else to say. I mean, similar to stuff with Bergman, it's sort of like how much can I say about this film that I'm sure that many others have already written so much about and analyzed so much about and poured over so much about. But also when it comes down to just like Ivan's childhood didn't really strike me in a strong way that I could really talk much about it. I mean, there were, yeah, like I said, sequences and scenes and images that I thought were beautiful, but at the end of the day, it just I didn't respond to it. I didn't resonate with it like I thought I would. But the fact that I did respond in some way to the surreal elements, the esoteric elements, those poetic tone poem elements, the fact that I did really enjoy those and what those kind of stood for and how they kind of what they provided for me leads me to believe, maybe it's naively, but you know, optimistically, I'd like to think that I'm really going to get into Solaris and that I'm really going to get into The Mirror. At the same time, I know that Tarkovsky and Bergman's names can sometimes be mentioned in the same conversation, and I'm also realizing that I didn't really respond to Bergman stuff, so we'll see. I am cautiously optimistic, let's just say that. So it is easy enough for you to get your hands on Ivan's Childhood if you want to see it again. If you are fortunate enough to have a subscription to Filmstruck, you can watch it for free on Filmstruck. If you do not, like me, have a Filmstruck subscription, you can rent it or purchase it through iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. So it is certainly not obscure and it's certainly not difficult to get your hands on. I, as is always the case with films that I struggle with, that I am not sure what to deal with, I want to hear from listeners. I want to hear from anyone and everyone about Tarkovsky, about Ivan's Childhood, about any past episodes. And of course, as always, it is super easy to do that. Email me at youdomoviesbadly@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook at idomoviesbadly, where I will... if I remember, hopefully be posting the Criterion article or essay from the Criterion collection of Ivan's Childhood. So you can also kind of read that and see what they have to say. Twitter, I'm Nolan Fixes Teeth. If you want to catch up on back episodes of I Do Movies Badly, you can do that on BattleshipRetention.com. Go to the podcast drop-down menu, find I Do Movies Badly, and you can go back there. Or you can go through or go to iTunes as well. And while you're there, you can also leave me a review. Say what you want. Hopefully it's positive. doesn't have to be. I hope it's honest, more so than anything at all. And maybe if it's really good, I'll read it on the podcast. But yeah, so that does it for Ivan's childhood. I'm sorry for, once again, if this is a bit brief and kind of lacking in substance. I always kind of struggle with this when I don't feel too strongly one way or another about a movie. And of course, I'm sorry for the ever present presence of my radiator bubble guts, but. Be sure to tune in next week where I will be covering Tarkovsky's Solaris, and I will be just a little bit less ignorant, and Bubbleguts will be just a little bit less obnoxious.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.